Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this December 16. This hour of the program, the effect of the Great Recession on family trends in America. Our guest says it's been dramatic with regard to birth rates and divorce and has been strongly suggestive of family violence, but less clear for marriage and cohabitation. Philip Cohen will be joining us momentarily, professor of sociology, director of graduate studies at the University of Maryland in College Park, and author of The Family, Diversity, Inequality, and Social Change. Professor Cohen has a long-standing research interest in the areas of gender, family, and social change. We'll be welcoming phone calls. You probably have noticed some of what we're talking about in your own families or families you know. Our phone number for you to join the conversation this hour is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. A couple quick reminders. Daniel Golden was with us yesterday to give us the book list of the best of 2014. It is now on our Facebook page. I know you are looking for that once we have that show. So The Kathleen Dunn Show, you will find the book list. We're also doing, we haven't done this in years, tomorrow we're doing our classic comedy show at 2 o'clock, and we still have room for a couple of suggestions. So if you have something you think is uproariously funny, please let us know. Same place, Facebook page, and we'll try and squeeze it in tomorrow. Professor Philip Cohen, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, nice to have you here. What's dramatic about these studies, I think, is on birth rates, which dropped particularly for young women. And what was dramatic in my reading of this was that it may mean that some people will just not have children.
Right. Well, whenever there's, even if the intention of people was to delay their births, some births delayed always result in births foregone, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's not, we can see this sort of at the population level or in the broad trends. You can never, it's very hard to pin down in any one case, you know, what, who delays on purpose, who delays because, the moment just doesn't present itself, or they are not in a relationship, and who will end up not ever having children because of something that happened, you know, in 1 or 2 years in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Too hard to tell.
But you also looked at this decline in fertility, and you found that states that had greater increases in unemployment had lower birth rates, right?
Right. So, I mean, there certainly is a strong connection, both in terms of the overall timing, that is the fact that there is such a big drop in birth rates right during the recession. It really seems like it's connected. And then, like you say, it was stronger in the states that had higher increases in unemployment. So those two factors really suggest that the economic crisis had a lot to do with it.
What is this study that was done on 27 European countries that looked at troubled financial situations and childbearing goals?
Right. Well, it's interesting to kind of pair that up with the data on this recession. That was a general survey, not about the effect of the recession per se, but it asked when people perceive their financial situation to be in trouble, what happens to their childbearing goals, and sort of how they see their likely family outcome. You know, where they think they're headed, and what sort of happened was. It seems that when people are feeling more insecure about their financial situation, they tend to be unsure about whether they'll meet their goals, even if their ideal doesn't change. So they may say, well, I still think two children is the right number, but I'm less sure that that's what's going to happen in my life.
Mm-hmm. The other area that was of concern is domestic violence. You write that family violence has become much less common since the 1990s. We'll talk about why. But when the recession hit, there was a spike in intimate partner violence.
Yeah, well, again, you know, we want to be cautious when we're just looking at trends and time. And so the question is, can we connect this to the recession? And you know, there's good evidence from you know, for a long time, that when families or individuals experience economic shock of some kind, they're more likely to experience violence in their relationship. So you would sort of expect something as big as the big unemployment shock that we had in 2008, 2009 to have an effect like that. And if you look at the trends, it does look that way. That is, the levels are still quite a bit lower than they were in the 80s and early 90s. But there is a pretty big jump up in 2008, 2009, which corresponds to the biggest increase, especially in men's unemployment. And so I think that's it's a likely scenario that the stress added to relationships, possibly the the options, maybe it's more difficult for women to leave troubled relationships. You know, the actual mechanism is a little unclear, but the relationship appears pretty strong.
And what about the issue of family violence was becoming less common since the 1990s, and then it changed. Do we know why there was less family violence starting in the 90s?
It's really interesting. I mean, there has been a general decline in violent crime since the 80s and 90s, and so this is connected to that. But it seems likely that the intimate partner violence in particular is associated with better opportunities for women to leave troubled relationships, so better career opportunities, financial security, employment, and so on. It may be that divorce, although the divorce rate has not been rising, the cultural acceptance of divorce may have increased, so that those people who are in bad relationships have that option. And then there could be we'd like to think that there's an effect of the sort of increased attention to the problem of family violence and the non-governmental organizations and the public-private partnerships that have created a lot of sort of support services since that time. We'd like to think that had a positive effect. It's hard to show.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those things probably came together. It's hard to identify exactly one.
You would think that if there was an increase in family violence, there would be an increase in divorce rates as well, but that wasn't the case, right?
Right. Well, you know, the divorce situation is quite complicated, and it's really, you know, from my point of view, it's fascinating, but it's also it's difficult to figure out, and the reason is divorce is expensive, and so right at the time when more people might want to divorce or when their relationships might be in trouble is when it's difficult to get a divorce. And not just legally, you know, the legal fees, but especially in this last recession, which was so wrapped up in the housing market and the crisis in real estate, is it's difficult to go through with a divorce, which requires establishing a new household, essentially. So someone's got to move, and someone's got to rent or buy a new house.
Right.
Often the couple has to sell a house, and that was pretty hard. So what we actually saw was a pretty big drop in divorce rates in about 2009, and then a little bit of a rebound. And so it seems likely that there was more stress, there was more conflict, yet fewer people could work it out, and then sort of maybe now we're going to catch up a little.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that we're living in a time now where the recession is over, or are we still feeling the effects of it?
Well, I think we still are. I mean, I think the unemployment rate has come down quite a bit. The housing market has improved. But we haven't seen the big increase in wages that you'd like to see after a recession. There's still a lot of long-term unemployment. There's still concentrated unemployment in some areas, some industries. So I think there's still certainly effects which are with us. And the truth is, in terms of family life, you know, if people delayed marriage or didn't get into a relationship because it didn't seem right because someone didn't have a job or someone didn't have a good job, if families experienced a few years of stress, even if they didn't get divorced, you know, that can take a toll. And you might find, that I'm sure there are people out there who will get divorced in 5 years, and if you ask them about their life story, it will go back to losing a job in 2008 or 2009.
Mm. So what we've been hearing about young people graduating from college and not being able to find jobs that are family-supporting jobs, and so many people in their 20s delaying marriage and childbearing, your studies have borne out?
Yes, and I think those are long-term trends,
mm-hmm.
and so I think some things were exacerbated. You know, sort of this prolonged advanced adolescence, you could say, of children. Those children of parents living with their parents into their 20s or having difficulty finding jobs or establishing themselves, those continued. On the plus side, you know, I think we may find more people continuing their education because they're trying to protect themselves against, unemployment, or they weren't – the prospects didn't look good, so they stayed in school. And some of those things may turn out to be beneficial in the long run too.
What about differences between men and women in these areas, particularly how the recession hit them? Are there gender differences or not?
Well, the pattern with unemployment was a gender difference, that it hit men more first and then women more subsequently. And then on the rebound, I think men recovered more quickly. So there was sort of a, you know, if you think about a lot of if you lay that over families, you may find there were a lot of families that had suddenly the husband or father losing his job or facing possible job loss, and then a wave later affecting women. And so, you know, it's very, very complicated to try to figure that out. But the timing was different for men and women, and that's just because of the sectors of the economy they work in.
I know you've looked at career trajectories and whether or not they will be altered forever unfavorably among these young people who have graduated from school. Do you suspect they will be?
Sadly, probably so.
Really?
I think we've seen that from the generation of people, especially who came out of school in the early 80s when there was sort of a back-to-back recession, 81, 83 in that period. You know, their big years in the life of a person's career, it's you basically can't recoup that. You can get back on a reasonable track, and you know most people will. You end up in the jobs and have careers and get married and have children and so on. But you know the years lost or the years in which you were underplaced or underpaid or working in a job that was not ideal for your skills, that more or less gets put in your cumulative file.
Well, that's sad, isn't it?
Well, it is, and that's why these aren't just numbers. I mean, we find that millions of people have their lives sort of altered in permanent ways, and I think, you know, if you think about the delayed births, it's not as much people, couples sitting around and saying, should we have a baby now or not? It's more, you know, more people who are not meeting somebody or not meeting somebody who seems right, or people who are deciding not to move in together or get married because it just doesn't seem right and so on. And you know, it's a lot of small effects that add up to these trends we see, but it's real life for everybody.
So I'm wondering, historically, Professor Cohen, was there a time when it was easier to be in your 20s and either going to college or not going to college and thinking, hey, I've got the world at my fingertips here. I can get a job pretty easily and I'll settle down and have a family. Was there an easier time to be young?
Yes. Well, I think the frame of reference that a lot of people have today, a lot of older people who are old enough to remember this, is the 50s and 60s, when we had a time of economic prosperity and of a certain kind. The opportunities for people with relatively low levels of education were much better, and they were better in the sense of a trajectory. So just like you say, people understood that they could get a working class job with just a high school diploma, and that they could probably expect to keep it and probably expect to have incremental wage increases over their careers. And that sort of stability was present in people's family decision making. And people would get married not because they were already financially secure, but because they were on a trajectory that was understood to be heading in that direction. I think the level of security, especially for men's employment, was much higher in that particular period, not always in the past, but really in that moment, that post-war prosperity period. And that's what we're using as our frame of reference often today.
And what about wage increases in 2014? Is anybody seeing any?
Some, but not much. That's a little out of my expertise, but it appears that we have not recovered from what was lost, and for the average worker, wages are not appreciably higher than they were 10 or even 20 years ago.
We're going to welcome phone calls to get real-life stories about what Professor Cohen has been talking about. We're looking at the effect of the Great Recession on family trends, and you heard him say that some of these changes may alter people's lives in permanent ways when it comes to how couples select each other, who gets married, who doesn't get married, the decision to have a child, the family violence that's associated with the Great Recession. His studies show that some births delayed inevitably become births foregone based on the effect of unemployment on birth rates in earlier periods. It appears a substantial number of young women who postpone births will end up never having children. The divorce statistics are, as he says, counterintuitive. Economic hardship and insecurity does make relationships more stressful and increases the risk of divorce, but the overall divorce rate usually drops when unemployment rates rise because it's difficult to venture off on your own and the increased housing costs, et cetera. So the question to you is, has the Great Recession influenced your family life in some way or that of your children in terms of when they might settle down, in terms of what's happened with perhaps being in a bad relationship and not divorcing because of economic concerns, in terms of domestic violence numbers, that the impact of all of these trends on American families are still with us, and the professor says will likely take years to emerge what the ultimate impact is. Here's our phone number. Join us. We'd love to hear you talk about the real life consequences of the Great Recession. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Philip Cohen is professor of sociology, director of graduate studies at the University of Maryland, author of The Family, Diversity, Inequality, and Social Change. Particularly interested in hearing from those of you who may be in your 20s and compare the situation that you face in terms of finding work, finding a mate, having children with your parents' generation. Do you find that it's a more difficult time and that you'll maybe be making decisions that are different than theirs because the recession has hit you pretty hard and will have long-lasting consequences? We'd love to hear from you, and we will continue our conversation in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're looking at the effect of the Great Recession on family trends in this country, and they are fairly dramatic. The most dramatic was on birth rates, which dropped precipitously, particularly for young women, not as much for older women. We'll talk about that with the professor in a moment. We'll look at the issue of divorce and whether or not there is more divorce or less divorce and domestic violence as well. And asking you to examine what's happened in your family, the impacts in your family of the Great Recession. Are they profound among people who are in their 20s? Is it altering their life course in some ways? Is it altering decision to make children, to stay in relationships that are not very good because it's expensive to be on your own? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And you can always leave messages for us, talk@wpr.org. or our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we start our calls for Professor Cohen with Andy in Oshkosh. Hi, Andy.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Well, I'm dating my girlfriend. I've been dating her for 3 years now, and we're both going to be teachers next semester when we graduate. And we're both 22 years old. And when I look at my parents right now, they had their first kid and they were married at 22. Both of them never went to college. My dad got a job at a paper mill from my hometown. My mom became a a nurse, no experience. And I guess with our outlook as teachers, especially in Wisconsin, you know, it does kind of frighten me that, you know, we'll get out of college, have no job. So, I mean, our discussion about marriage or even the thought of children is kind of like way out there for us. I just kind of think that's funny that my parents were married and having children at 22 years old and right. with jobs that could support them. And
so are you getting married shortly after college, Andy, or are you postponing that decision?
I'm pretty sure that decision can be postponed. My older brother did that. He got married after college. But even then, my parents kind of thought that was a little too soon because then they're off any health care coverage that they can get from my parents. And it's really all comes down to finances after a while.
Right. Professor Cohn.
Well, it's interesting. One thing we didn't mention that has changed in the context for people's decision-making is the big rise in income inequality that we've seen in this country.
Right.
And I think that adds a layer of insecurity, especially when people like Andy and his girlfriend are trying to decide whether they can take care of their children. It appears to people that the stakes are higher. So if you're not able to provide for your children what you think they're going to require in terms of housing and healthcare and education and special, you know, I don't want to freak Andy out, but all the things that you want to that you want to spend money on to provide your children with what you know people rightly are concerned they're going to need in order to be successful. I think that insecurity or that lack of confidence in the future weighs on people when they make these kind of major decisions.
Do you worry at all, Andy, that you won't be able to find jobs, or do you think that the teaching profession has a number of possibilities for you and your girlfriend?
It's something that we already knew about getting into, that it wasn't going to be the most prolific and, I guess, biggest paying jobs out there.
Mm-hmm.
But it does kind of worry me a little bit that our finances might not be able to do the same things that my parents were able to do for me.
Right.
When my mom was raising me and my two brothers, my dad told her to take off of work. So she quit her job, and he worked full-time at the mill supporting us. And when I think about that now, I think of the ability for a one parent working and a stay-at-home mother or stay-at-home father is a little bit, I guess, unrealistic, especially in the profession that we're choosing where starting salary can be $20,000 or $23,000 a year.
Right. Yeah, teachers don't make enough money. Mm-hmm. It is almost unheard of to think that you can afford having children and a decent life if both parents aren't working. What a huge change, Professor Cohn, from the time I was growing up.
Yes, it is. You know, on the plus side of that is, especially for women, they're much more likely to have completed college by the time they have children. Of course, that's only for people who are completing college, which is something, 35 or 40% of women at this point. There are advantages. The delay, if the delay is associated with increasing education and improved job opportunities and economic security, you know, that's great. To the extent that it is really a reflection of insecurity or lack of confidence in the future, then that weighs on people. I mean, one of the things we see nationwide is the overall decline in fertility. So, you know, if we repeated 2012 over and over again, we'd end up with about 1.9 children per woman. Eventually that would lead to population decline, right? Every woman's got to have two children on average who survive to childbearing age if you want your population to maintain itself.
Mm-hmm.
We're lucky. In this country, we have plenty of immigration pressure. People who would like to move here. So population shrinking is not so much of a concern for us. But, you know, you see these pressures weighing on the whole population, especially when people are delaying marriage and childbearing. And that usually means having fewer children.
Well, can you give Andy any encouragement?
Well, the good news is, you know, not knowing more than what you've said, obviously, but, you know, couples with two college degrees, two earners, two careers, have a layer of protection and the possibility for a backup plan that actually was absent in the past when the husband breadwinner, wife homemaker model predominated. I mean, that was okay if everything was all right for the husband, and I sort of glossed over that in the, when I was describing the rosy 50s and 60s. But of course, if a man lost his job in that time, and plenty did, you know, that was a major crisis for the family. So if families have two earners now, then they do have the possibility to protect themselves from future shocks.
Yeah. Well, all the best, Andy, to you and your girlfriend. Have good lives. And thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Linny in McFarland. Hi, Linny.
Hi. I have two granddaughters living with me because their opportunities to earn a decent living are, they both have baccalaureates in 2013 for one and 2008 for the other. And they were scholarship kids. I advised my granddaughter, who was in a fairly good job in Japan, but very socially isolated, to hang on for another year and tough it out because she couldn't probably get a decent job coming back. So there was that. And in the background, I remember people having, my uncle having a child in 1918 because he didn't want to be drafted, and other people who did that toward the end of the Depression who had delayed having kids. So it is a complicated picture, and the girls are with me. The Price is Right. They're getting residency in jobs well below their educational level, at least one of them, gaining residency to go to graduate school. So they're 26 and 28 now, and it's going to change the course of their life,
yes,
for sure.
Yes. And are they going into graduate areas, Linny, that are different than their undergraduate areas?
Not really. There's some decisions to be made, but one of them will be in a biological science for sure.
Mm-hmm. Professor Cohn.
Well, this applies more to younger children, but we have seen a rise in the number of children living with grandparents. That was already begun before the recession, but really did increase during the recession. So that about 8 million children, or about 1 in 10 children, are living with a grandparent. And a significant number of those, about a third, are being primarily cared for by a grandparent. That's children under 18. The good news in the long run is, people are living longer, thankfully. More people have healthy and active grandparents. More people have had longer relationships with their grandparents as a result of people living longer, but also having fewer siblings in the family. So if you have only one or two children and their grandparents live long, active lives, then, you know, we have a whole realm of relationships that are different from they were, you know, a century ago, longer, richer relationships. You know, it's great to have that as an option. On the other hand, it's sort of sad to see people exercising that option not as a matter of choice.
Thank you, Linny. All the best to your granddaughters. I'm thinking, she was talking about her college-educated and soon to have graduate degrees. I'm thinking about all the young people, and it's many of them who don't have college degrees, and I would imagine that their futures are even less rosy.
Well, and the problem is, because we have a social class system, it's not random. You know, people who are poor are more likely to have poor parents and grandparents. And, you know, it goes up and down the generations. And so, you know, the people who maybe need intergenerational family support the most are also the least likely to have it. And those people who are the most successful or stable person in their family may find a lot of people on their doorstep when times are tough.
Yeah. Do you know if there is, and you're in the college education field, is there a disconnect, Professor Cohen, between what it is we study in school and where the jobs are? Do we need to be focusing more on what the economy is, and do we need to be teaching people on how you can live on less than money than your mother and father had?
Well, I hope not. There's an argument to be made, and your show full of economists could argue this back and forth, but there is an argument to be made that our widening inequality and the concentration of wealth at the top is hurting our ability to take advantage of more diverse skills and interests that people have. And if we had a more a balanced distribution of wealth, then we might have be able to absorb more artists and people whose interests are not engineering and so on. And then our education system may in fact be underproducing in some of those fields also. But I think, you know, a well-educated population, including a broad education, not just education for jobs that are immediately in demand, should be good for a healthy society. It's just a question of getting to that arrangement where we can take advantage of all those skills.
Carol left this message concerning Andy. She wanted him to know that with Obamacare, you can stay on your parents' health care until age 26, even if you are married. If a plan covers children, they can be added to or kept on a parent's health insurance policy until they turn 26 years old. Children can join or remain on a parent's plan if they are married, not living with their parents, attending school, not financially dependent on their parents, eligible to enroll in their employer's plans. These rules apply to both job-based plans and individual plans bought inside or outside the marketplace. So maybe that will make him feel a little better.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. We welcome more phone calls. We're talking this hour with Professor Philip Cohen, and we're looking at the effect of the Great Recession on family trends in America. The summary of what he's studied here has shown that with regard to birth rates and divorce, there has been a dramatic impact. And also, when it comes to family violence, a dramatic impact, less clear for marriage and cohabitation. We've heard from several of you who have said that you're either a young person and you're facing college graduation and you're worried that you're going to have to postpone marriage, particularly if you're going to be a teacher or some occupation that doesn't pay a whole lot of money, that your finances are not going to be in as good a shape as your parents were. And we're hearing from a grandmother whose two granddaughters are living with her. What do you think about all of this? How did the Great Recession have an impact on your family or on your children's career choices? We would love very much to hear your stories, and here's how we can hear them. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Cohen is a professor of sociology and director of graduate studies at the University of Maryland, and he is author of The Family, Diversity, Inequality, and Social Change. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, two more phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. The email, if you'd like to go that route, is talk@wpr.org. We're always interested in hearing your stories on Facebook, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. After doing this study, do you come up with any recommendations of how society needs to respond to this, Professor Cohen, and what you thought needed to happen next after knowing all of this?
Well, that's a great question, and I, that the clarification about the changes under Obamacare is well taken.
Yes.
I think one way to think about policy approaches to family and security in general is to find these pressure points, to these places in family life where people face insecurity and that impact their ability to make decisions based on the future. You know, we really want people to have long-term plans, and we find that they make better decisions when they're confident in their own plans. So healthcare is one thing that is actually very important for that. The fear of a health shock bankrupting you or causing a major problem is one issue, but I think we can also look at education, for example, you know, early childhood education, preschool education. If people are more confident that they'll be able to afford that education or that it'll be available to them, they may be more planful in their family lives. And on the other end of the age spectrum is retirement. And the more secure people feel about their retirement future, the more they will be able to act according to their own hopes and dreams, and less acting out of fear and insecurity.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So that's a general orienting framework on policy. What can we do to reduce insecurity for people and let them live the lives that they really aspire to?
Right. Keaton is next in La Crosse. Hi.
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 Well, my mom went to college for 7 years and she got herself a master's degree. And she still, to this day, is carrying around the debt of having to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
She had three kids. She was married twice, and she just had to. Well, we just always struggled. It's just always been put on the back burner. And now that I've graduated high school, I've just chosen not to go to college because I just feel that I'm not going to be able to support myself if I don't get a job in the field that I go for.
What will you do? When you graduate? What will you do, Keaton?
I would have loved to go on for art, for my own interest.
Right.
Because that's what my mom always said to go to college for. Go for what you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And if I went for what I wanted, I just don't believe I'd be able to support myself in the way this country goes these days.
Mm. Professor Cohn, several issues there.
Well, it is, you know, at the very basic level, if all going to college or even finishing high school, if all that means is it's more time that you could have been on the bottom rungs of the labor market, you know, getting your first small wage increases, you know, over those few years, if all education does for you is give you debt and cost your time, then of course it's not worth it. Now, you know, it's easy for me to say, and it's easy to say in the general trends, that more education in the population is generally better. It's, incomes rise and productivity rises and so on. Now, I can't make a decision for anybody, but usually education is worth it now. How it's financed is a huge problem, and we have a big problem in this country of saddling young people with a lot of debt and providing them with degrees of questionable value. So those are two problems we need to address from both ends. So I can't give Keaton any advice, but I think in terms of social policy, we want to find ways to both promote education and make that education worthwhile.
Yeah. Well, his mom shouldn't still have to be carrying student debt. He's 18 years old, Keaton. That's a long time to be carrying debt. Isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Okay, Keaton, all the best to you. You hate to say goodbye to him and say give it up. Don't go study something that you really want to do.
No, my advice is always more school. And the truth is, sometimes it doesn't work out, but the upside potential is still there, I think. So, you know, that's my opening position is go to
school.
Okay,
all right, good. All right, thank you. Gail in Fish Creek, hi.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In listening to all this, it's just reminding me of how we are all collectively at realizing a very rude awakening of how over the decades It's become necessary for families to become a two-income household and to have more than one, two, and even three jobs, and how the educational system is just lacking for really everybody. It's becoming more expensive, and it's actually becoming less important because there's a status taking place. Richard Wolff had done research on it. He's from MIT, and he talks about the research that he found out is how different the pay scales became for CEOs of companies versus the employees, and how a lot of things changed in what companies actually offer their employees, and how much has changed over even, say, the last 40 years or 30 years. And it is a lot harder for everybody now than you would think so, than it was in the past. But I think we all have to just live through this, keep breathing, and make the adjustments we need to make, and hang in there, because we're not alone.
Professor Cohn.
Yeah, well, that's really well put. I think, as far as how to actually survive through insecure times, I think it's worth us looking at that inequality issue that you raise about the highest paid people, because we're in sort of a loop right now where the very highest paid people, the executives in our economy, are in a very tiny class of people who are setting their own pay scale. You know, they're the CEO and the board, which is people just like them, decide how much to pay them. Then they step down, somebody else goes into that spot, and everybody votes on another increase. It's really hard. The math of this is hard to really absorb. But the richest tiny fraction of the people in our economy are making so much money and have so much wealth that even if you increase taxes on them by just a few percent, you generate a huge amount of money that could be spent on a lot of the things that are troubling everybody else in their daily lives. So, you know, that's a very broad brush thing. But if you look at the curves on the income inequality, when it's that steep, there is money out there, but it's just piling up at the very top. And, you know, with a slight alteration in our priorities, we could take the edge off for a lot of people facing insecure times.
Well, we've been knowing about that for some time, Professor Cohn, and what do we do about it? Nothing.
Right. Well, that's a political question, and a question of how do we influence policy and politics, and that's above my pay grade. But you know, I can help us understand the consequences of what
right.
we're doing, and I hope there are people out there listening who are motivated to act on this.
Thank you very much for your call. We go to Gary, and Gary's in Neenah. Hi, Gary. Gary, are you there? Well, he's not, but I can tell you a little bit about what he wanted to talk about. He and his wife divorced, and he says probably because of the Great Recession, what we're talking about, he put off remarriage.
Well, you know, the people end up delaying or not getting married as a conscious choice because, you know, it doesn't seem right, or the circumstances just aren't there. You know, they're not them or their partner or the person that they would have met just don't come together in the right situation because someone doesn't have a job or someone doesn't have job security and just don't seem like an attractive candidate or, you know, not in the right mood.
Yeah. Kristen in Eau Claire sent this email. Is there any correlation between the increased demands by employers on employees during the recession, more work being placed on fewer employees, and the birth rate?
That's a great question, and I don't think we know the exact answer to that, but I would say that's an excellent hypothesis. That's something you'd want to really look at, and especially the lower end of the labor market, and there's been some great exposure on this recently. Lower paid workers, especially in part-time jobs, may have their schedules juggled around. They may be driving around to eight different Starbucks in their city to work their shifts and so on. Not to pick on Starbucks, but they were in the news recently for this.
Mm-hmm.
And just being able to arrange the logistics, to plan your child care, to arrange things with your own mother or whoever is helping you with child care.
Right.
I think that that daily drag and demand of just trying to manage the logistics of life for working class people probably is a factor. I would expect it to be, and I'd love to see us be able to really investigate that.
Mm-hmm. We have time for a couple more phone calls if you'd like to join us. The effects of the Great Recession on families in America is the topic this hour, and our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're hearing about the effects on your family or families you know about as we speak this hour of the program with Professor Cohn. He is a professor of sociology at the University of Maryland and is author of the book, The Family, Diversity, Inequality, and Social Change. We didn't talk about older women here when we were looking at births. You have found that there was no drop at all among women over 40. They couldn't wait any longer, I guess, but...
Well, actually, the birth rates for women 40 and older have been rising and are at their highest level since the 60s. I mean, the interesting thing is, you know, in the 60s, women who were age 40 were having their third or fourth child. Now we increasingly have people having their first or second at that age. So that's true. I mean, even in the biggest drop was in the between 2007 and 2009, birth rates fell 10% for women in their early 20s and rose 5% for women in their early 40s. And that's that's a lifestyle or life situation change where more women and couples have either decided to or found themselves in a position of having children later in life. And you're right, it can't be postponed.
Yeah. So this is because they just didn't feel they were financially secure until that age, or they couldn't leave the workforce. They felt they wouldn't be promoted, or what was it?
Well, I think it's all of that. I think it also is some of the delay is natural as a result of longer time in education. So it takes that much longer maybe to find a partner and start off on a childbearing course. And some of it is also the choice of wanting to be more established, that fear that you're not going to have enough resources or a stability to raise children, or maybe even just the confidence that I can do this at age 40 or 42 and be that much more secure and well-situated, so I may as well. I mean, some of that is purely positive.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Samantha in Eau Claire next. Hi, Samantha.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am actually just graduating. I have my last final tomorrow from the University of Wisconsin Stout.
Congratulations.
Originally, I wanted to go to the University of Minnesota for art history, but because of Stout, they have a graduation to hire ratio in the 90%. I chose to go there, and I found that they have more industry input, and they're a polytechnic university, so they specify with more industry-based learning rather than art degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of wondering if your guest had any input about the rise of polytechnic universities or even community colleges for technical jobs.
Yeah, well, I think, I don't know if you remember, but President Obama got in trouble for making a quip about art history as a sort of a dead-end career at one point, had to apologize to the Art History Association. but it is true. I mean, I think our education system has always had this relationship with industry where industry leaders have attempted to get out of the education system sort of a publicly funded investment in the skills that they need. And there's a positive side to that. Of course, it's self-interested also. But I think what we've seen in the last several decades is the increase of that going on at the higher levels. So you're absolutely right. It's in 4-year degrees and associate's degrees, other certificate and degree programs where they may be customized fairly closely to the needs of industry. And the great thing about that is that it may ensure employment for people, and the downside is fewer people get to pursue their dream of art history. So,
right. What are you going to do with the art? Are you going to just draw on the side, Samantha?
Actually, I went for apparel design and development, so I get to indulge in my love of art and fashion, but I was just offered a job over the summer for product development, so I get to blend it with a little bit of technical, but I still have the art involved.
Excellent.
Could be a dream come true.
Yes, it could.
It is, yeah.
Great. All right, carry on. Happy graduation.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. What an interesting hour. Thank you so much, Professor Cohn, for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Good. So do we. Our guest this hour, talking, Professor Philip Cohn. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Maryland and author of The Family, Diversity, Inequality, and Social Change, talking about the effects of the Great Recession on the American family. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour, and KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Political fundraising, all the stories you're going to hear the second hour of our program today. And don't forget tomorrow, comedy, classic comedy during the second hour of this program.